translation. The sense organs are attached to the modes of material nature, and the modes of material nature are products of the false ego. The mind is subjected to all kinds of material experiences, happiness and distress, and the intelligence is the feature of the mind's deliberation. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Illusioned by the material nature, the living entity identifies with false ego. More clearly, when the living entity is entrapped by the material body, he at once identifies with the bodily relationships, forgetting his own identity as spirit soul. This false ego associates with different modes of material nature, and thus the senses become attached to the modes of material nature. Mind is the instrument for feeling different material experiences, but intelligence is deliberative and can change everything for the better. The intelligent person, therefore, can attain salvation from the illusion of material existence by proper use of intelligence. An intelligent person can detect the awkward position of material existence and thus begin to inquire as to what he is, why he is subjected to different kinds of miseries, and how to get rid of all miseries. And thus, by good association, an advanced, intelligent person can turn towards the better life of self-realization. It is advised, therefore, that an intelligent person associate with the great sages and saints who are on the path of salvation. By such association, one can receive instructions which are able to slacken the conditioned soul's attachment for matter, and thus the intelligent man gradually gets rid of the illusion of matter and false ego and is promoted to the real life of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. Gunatmakan Indriyani Bhutadi Prabhava Guna Manasarva Vikaratma Buddhir Vijnana Rupini. The sense organs are attached to the modes of material nature, and the modes of material nature are products of the false ego. The mind is subjected to all kinds of material experiences, happiness and distress, and the intelligence is the feature of the mind's deliberation. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharne Niravishesha Shunyavadi Pastyatyade Jatarne Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivas Adi Gaura Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare Vanchakalpa Trulubhyas Jagripa Sindhubhya Evacha Paditanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So, devotees, here we have Lord Brahma instructing Narada in these basic features and functions of the material nature or of life in the material world, life on the material platform. And you know, this is all very analytical and a little technical in certain respects, But it's very interesting, and it's very important, actually, that here the living entity, illusioned by material nature, then the living entity identifies with false ego, and as Prabhupada explains, means with the body, with the particular type of body one has, male, female, big, small, and whatever sort of background like that. And we identify, and this is false ego. Ego, in the basic sense, ego is a Latin word, means I am, a sense of identity. Of course, oftentimes we hear the term ego used in the sense of a person, someone sort of wants to be dominant or something along those lines, and egotistic, and they feel they're more important, they have certain rights to assert themselves, maybe over other people, something like that. That's ego, but actually ego just means who I am, or who I think I am. And there's real ego, means I am the eternal servant of Krishna, Jivera Swarupaya, Krishnera Nitya Das, Krishnera Tatasta Shakti, Bhed Abhed Prakash. That's real ego, that's really what I am. But then there's false ego, and it means that I think I am, but I think I'm something which I'm not. And, well, that's material existence. We entered this material world at some point in the extremely distant past, and we've been through many, many different bodies trying to find enjoyment in this material world, but failing rather miserably. But we push on from body to body with one false identity. Things don't work out like that, so we adopt another false identity. Things don't work out like that, and it just goes on. And you could say, if nothing else, the living entity should get sort of, what, like 10 out of 10 for trying hard, something like that. You know, what an effort has been made. It's just incredible. 11 out of 10, actually. And persevering, despite, sometimes all sorts of fantastic things, and not fantastically nice, but fantastically bad things happening, but despite that, pushing on. If at first you don't succeed, try again. So that's there. That's there. It's quite amazing. Actually, probably, maybe none of you were here, or I don't know who might have been here, but years ago when I was based here in the 70s in Bhaktivedanta Manor, we had a drama group. They called it CHIT, Chaitanya's Instant Theatre. And once they did, well, you've heard of the fish play, no doubt. Have you heard of the fish play? Anyway, there's a play called The Fish Play, in which Mr. Fish falls from the material world into this world and tries to find happiness. So they had different versions, sort of the basic idea evolving in different ways. So they had the fish play, then they had fresh fish, means the living entity finds other ways to try to enjoy but fails. And then they had fried fish, which means, I mean, they were hilarious, actually. They were just brilliantly hilarious. In fried fish, Mr. Fish, trying to somehow find some way to enjoy some place, some sort of activity he could enjoy, he is arrested and tried in court for failing to enjoy. Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was put on trial. And phew, what a play. Anyway, so you probably heard that the people, the person behind the Rocky Horror Show, saw the fish play somehow or other, and he wanted to sort of put it on as a real professional production. I don't think it happened, but it's interesting. So, yeah. You know, perseverance, of course, perseverance is very important in Krishna consciousness, too. It's one of the symptoms of bhava, actually, which are listed out in, what is it, the 18th chapter of Nectar of Devotion, that the very advanced devotee on the level of bhava perseveres and perseveres and perseveres despite the challenges and the problems and even sort of the seeming impossibility of making a success. But the advanced devotee perseveres, and that's one of the main characteristics, nine characteristics of a devotee on the level of bhava. So in material life, that principle is there, and it applies to all of us. It applies to all of us. We've been in material life such a long time, just an unknown number of lifetimes, but we have persevered. We carried on despite everything. And Srila Prabhupada, there's one letter of Srila Prabhupada's in which Prabhupada appears to be replying to a letter from a devotee who's asking something like, why can't we remember our previous lifetimes? Something along those lines. And one thing Prabhupada says there is that actually it's Krishna's mercy that we can't remember, because what we've been through, at least in many, many cases, many, many lifetimes, is so horrible and shocking. Being viciously killed and just destroyed in so many ways in many lifetimes. Prabhupada says it's Krishna's mercy that we can't remember, because otherwise it would tend to be just too much, as happens with some people in war. Even there's one devotee, Parthasarathy Prabhu, who fought in, I think, Iraq for some time. And he also, it really, the horror of it all just affected him very deeply. So it's Krishna's mercy. But definitely we've been through a lot on the basis of false ego. And Prabhupada explains in the fourth canto the story of King Paranjan. Paranjan, among other things, well, particularly Paranjan was extremely attached to his wife. It's like he couldn't go for half an hour without seeing his wife. He'd become just too insecure and disturbed. and he'd have to find her. So at the end of his life as Paranjan, what did he remember in terms of what Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, yam yam vapi smaran bhavam? You remember, well, you attain to the state that you remember at the end of your life. And what are you going to remember? Basically, whatever you were most focused on during your life. So Paranjan, in his next life, became Paranjani, female. And Prabhupada makes the interesting point there, in one of the purports there. Prabhupada makes the interesting point that generally, or in so many cases, people during the course of their life, they have many attachments, but in so many cases, the main attachment is to some member of the opposite sex. And therefore, at the end of that life, they remember their husband or their wife, and in the next life, they go into that sex, the other gender. So there's a type of zigzag progress, male to female to male to female, from lifetime to lifetime. It's all based on false ego, this adopting, somehow or other, adopting this identity that this is me, and being completely convinced of that. So that's what is being talked about here, that in illusion, the living entity identifies with false ego, or identifies with the body and forgets his own real identity as spirit soul. And this is influenced. The false ego associates with different modes of nature, and the senses become attached to those, that set of circumstances and facilities and things offered in terms of a certain manifestation of the modes of material nature. You know, traditionally, at least, if you have a male body, then there's a certain set of sense objects which you'll be more inclined to than someone who has a female body, at least in many respects, not all, but in so many respects. So life goes on like this. The false ego is there, and based on the false ego, then certain arrangement of the modes of material nature, that's what you're mainly, you involve yourself with. Yes. So, you know, men in many cases, they're very interested in motor cars. But I remember one of our devotees in South Africa telling me, yes, we bought this car. We went and saw him and his wife. We went and saw many cars. But then my wife decided we wanted this car because it had a holder for a cup on one side in the front. And she thought, we got to have this car. So, that's generally not how a man would decide on what motor car to get. But she felt it had to be that car, and they bought it. So, yeah, things work like this. So, and the senses, so there's the senses based on the false ego. The senses are there, you know, human false ego, human senses, animal false ego, some sort of animal type senses with their types of attractions. And then there is, next step is, then there's the mind. And the mind is just, has this intrinsic connection with the senses. And the mind becomes attached. In terms of the senses that have been acquired, the mind becomes attached to those senses, and basically the function of the mind then is just to process the sensory sort of impulses and the experiences of the senses and evaluate them in terms of what will I do now? But it's all simply the mind. The mind has no intelligence of its own. It just knows how things feel. So if it feels, if the senses say, feels good, the mind says, right, we want this because it feels good. If the senses say it feels bad, whatever it is, mind says, oh no, we don't want that. And, yeah, because the intelligence is what, as Prabhupada points out here, can deliberate. The mind also sort of deliberates, but only in terms of what feels good, what feels better, and then a decision is made like that. Whereas the intelligence can deliberate and evaluate in terms of what may be best for me, what might help me the most, or what might not help me. And, yeah. So, but unfortunately with so many people, the 'cause they're under false ego, not real ego, so the intelligence is functioning in terms of the false ego, what is best for the false ego, like that. And in so many cases, nowadays particularly, what is best for the false ego is, how am I going to make the most money? How will I get the best job? And this sort of thing. Yeah, the intelligence, because false ego is the highest factor. So the intelligence is thinking, what will benefit my body and me in terms of my false ego as a man, as a woman, as a this or a that. This is going on. So Srila Prabhupada here emphasizes, he actually devotes half the purport or even slightly more to this point about the position of the intelligence and the best use of the intelligence and what can help sort of feed the intelligence, which is the association of devotees. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna also, he basically, in slightly different terms, but he also presents a similar or the same type of picture. There's a hierarchy. And when the hierarchy is sort of properly situated, means when you're in real ego, who am I? I am a devotee. So then the ego can dominate, direct the intelligence, all right, you must think how I can serve Krishna. And then the mind, the intelligence instructs the mind, and through the mind the senses are instructed, are directed, do service, like this, like that. That's the proper situation. But when a person's in false ego, then in a sense, the whole arrangement is turned upside down, in that the sense objects dictate that, look at me, I look really good, don't I? And the mind thinks, oh yes. And the intelligence is instructed, you must get the sense object, and in that way you'll be happy. So even not just the senses are dictating, but the sense objects are dictating. In many cases, they're inanimate. I mean, not all cases, of course, but you can just, something inanimate is, in a sense, dictating. And the living entity is just being dragged along, trying to enjoy material life on the basis of the dictations of the senses. So, but by proper use of intelligence, Prabhupada says a person can detect the awkward position of material existence. It's very interesting, in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Krishna speaking to Uddhava, he talks about, it's around about 10 things which can be adjusted by intelligence within a life of the life of a person, as maybe around 10 things which a person can adjust to improve their situation in the modes, or also transcendentally, things like the type, the place you live in. Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda Shri Shri Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman Shri Shri Gornitai Ki Jai. So you can adjust the place you live in. I mean, you can get a better place, more, you know, nicer facility in a nicer environment, which will be conducive at least for the mode of goodness, or conducive for Krishna consciousness. You can, with your intelligence, you can make that adjustment, or you can just adjust the place you're living in now. There's a saying that if a Brahmin and dirt are in the same place, either the dirt will go, or the Brahmin will go. But if they stay together, then the Brahmin ceases to be a Brahmin. How's that? That's interesting, isn't it? Yeah. So, yeah, you know, if you live in a dirty place, or if you're a sort of, don't mind me saying it, a dirty type of person, then you may be able to tolerate living in, you know, sort of some kind of hectic type of environment. But a Brahmin will not be able to tolerate that. A Brahmin will have to have, first of all, a clean environment, and then an organized environment. Yes, and then the Brahmin will feel comfortable. So, yeah, this is one point that Krishna makes there in that verse, that you can adjust to improve your situation, even just materially. You can adjust the place you live in. You can adjust the type of work you do, or the type of activity you do. Even as a devotee, you can do that. The type of service you do, or the way you do the service, can be adjusted by use of intelligence for your benefit, for your improvement, greater improvement, and certainly in material life. Well, I know one devotee, actually a disciple of mine, in fact, in Lithuania, extremely nice devotee. He was making a living by selling like scientific equipment to certain businesses. And he had a car to go around and visit their places. But he sold his car so he could go on pilgrimage to Mayapur. And he came back, he still had the job, but he didn't have a car. So he had to take the bus. And in Lithuania, it seems, they have these buses in which they play heavy music. I don't know if you have them here. Boom, boom, boom. That sort of music. And it's just, you know, overpowering. And they're just packed with wall-to-wall people. So he's there going and visiting these businesses. And he asked me, how do you chant your rounds nicely in a place where you're like this? People in front of you, you know, just all over you, and with this loud music. How do you chant your rounds nicely? And I said, you don't. You get a different job. So yeah, through intelligence, one can make adjustments in terms of working. The best situation, if you can achieve it, and some devotees have, is to get some sort of working arrangement, you know, occupational arrangement, where you work as little as possible, but you make as much money as possible. And if you can do that, that's good. It's conducive to your Krishna consciousness. So different things like this, what you read, what you hear, all these things can be adjusted. Krishna explains. All these things, different things can be adjusted so your position, at least in the modes, changes, or your position in Krishna consciousness changes like this. That's intelligence. So, but here Prabhupada, he brings up towards a little later on in the purport, very important point, that in terms of Krishna consciousness, it's not just that you just use your intelligence and that's it. It's just a question of how you use your intelligence. But it's also a question of who you associate with, what sort of association you have. You know, of course, you choose association to some degree with your intelligence, but the basic point in principle is that whoever you associate with, you'll become like them. At least to some degree, you'll become like them. So if you associate with very advanced devotees, then it's almost unavoidable that you will progress, at least, in Krishna consciousness. If you associate with devotees who are really inspired to hear and chant about Krishna, then you will become at least more inspired than you were to hear and chant about Krishna. And that will be extremely good for you. But, you know, of course, on the other hand, if you get bad association, then it will be detrimental for you. As a devotee, it will be detrimental for you. And, you know, we go out distributing books. I don't know how it is these days, but back in the 70s, there was just massive book distribution going on here. And, you know, you have to be out there in the streets like several hours a day meeting probably a couple of hundred people a day. And the thing is, when you're in that sort of situation, you're speaking with the people and there's some interaction to some degree of back and forth, then as a devotee, you have to sort of, in a nice sense, control the interaction. If you end up hearing the person explain their theories about life, then it will have an effect on your consciousness. You know, it's basically unavoidable if you hear, because you become like those you hear from. So, therefore, the idea is, you know, without sort of just being too heavy with the person, you have to be the one who's doing the majority of the talking. If we met born-again Christians who wanted to save us and bathe us in the blood and whatever else they do, we had this policy. We had this policy, actually. Policy is step one, you look at your watch, and then, oh, important appointment. Oh, I'm late, I must go, sorry. And then you go in the middle of them trying to save you. You know, like this. Yeah, you have to do it. Otherwise, you know, 6-8 hours interacting with a couple of hundred of them or something like that, your mind could go into a bit of a spin by the time you reach the end of the day. So yeah, association. An advanced, intelligent person can turn towards the better life of self-realization. So therefore, an intelligent person associates with great sages and saints, Prabhupada says here. By such association, you can get instructions which will slacken your attachment to this material world, which can even just cut through it and cut it off. You know, we see in Srimad Bhagavatam, right at the beginning, more or less, Narada Muni, as a little child, 5-year-old child, gets the association of some great devotees, Bhaktivedantas, and it makes a real impact on him. Prior to that, from what it seems, he was kind of a typical 5-year-old or something like that. And he was not really a devotee. But then he heard from them. You know, at least he had, you know, enough Sukriti to be willing or attracted to sitting with them and hearing from them. And it made a really great impact on his heart. So he's a very important example of someone being transformed from just being a little child. In fact, he says, I was good. He was a good little child. He wasn't a wild child, you know, running around and screaming, hyperactive child. He was a good boy. And so he served them, and he sat and listened to them like that. One time he asked them if he could take the remnants of their prasadam. They allowed him to. And this all had such a cumulative effect that after the rainy season means like 3 to 4 months of their association, he was a transformed person, even as a little child. And shortly afterward, his mother died, bitten by a snake. for your average 5-year-old with no father and nobody else, how shocking would that be? But Narada Muni, he had progressed to the point that he could tell himself, it is Krishna's arrangement. It is Krishna's mercy. Krishna's, now he wants me, he's facilitating me just going on pilgrimage and becoming deeply absorbed in him. So he did that. He didn't cry or get distressed, it seems, at all. But he actually took it as something positive. Then another example, of course, is Dhruva Maharaj in the 4th canto. I'm sure you all know the story very well. He got the association of Narada Muni. In fact, it's an interesting thing. If you study Srimad Bhagavatam, you find quite a number of the people in Srimad Bhagavatam who are devotees or who become devotees, it's through the influence of Narada Muni. Anyway, that's just an interesting little point. Quite a number of them. But Dhruva Maharaj, he got extremely disturbed by how he was treated by his father under the influence of his sort of stepfather. And so he left home, and Narada Muni came. He heard about it, so he came to help him. And Narada Muni told him that, well, he asked him, so what are you doing? And Dhruva told him, I am here to find God. And Narada said, well, look, you're a little boy. God's everywhere. He's in the palace too. Why don't you just go back to the palace and find God there? And there, you can have deep fried sabji, maha prasadam halava, and, haribol, and find God also. But Narada told, Dhruva told him, listen, if you can't help me, please leave me alone. Just go away. So Narada preached to him. But Narada preached to him so expertly that he facilitated, he gave instructions to facilitate Dhruva achieving his desire of getting a bigger kingdom than even his grandfather, who happens to be Lord Brahma. So how he instructed him so he could get that. So Dhruva was inspired, right, this is good, I'm going to do it and get my kingdom. But at the same time, he included in there instructions to help him progress spiritually. So by the time he finished his whole process and the Lord appeared to him, he had become free from his desire for a kingdom. So like this, the association of advanced devotees, which of course among other things means devotees who are able to instruct you in such ways that they'll actually really reach your heart and help you in ways which are relevant for you to make progress in Krishna consciousness. And this is what happened with these people, and of course there are numerous others in the Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, like that. So this is the point ultimately which Prabhupada is emphasizing. We have to feed our intelligence, but that is done specifically by getting the association of more advanced devotees and really accepting that, taking that, association and really taking it into our hearts. So in this way, we get promoted, Prabhupada says, to the real life of eternity, knowledge, and bliss by the instructions, the blessings, the association of the advanced devotees. I was looking at Hanuman earlier during the kirtan and thinking of a little Hanuman story, that Hanuman was an amazing singer. His singing was such that sometimes rocks would melt. I don't know who's our best singer in Bhaktivedanta Manor, but I don't know if they're on that level yet. Hanuman, rocks would melt. So Narada Muni heard about this. So Narada Muni, who's also a singer, he came, he wanted to hear Hanuman sing and just, you know, what's it like? So Narada Muni arrived and Hanuman was outside somewhere. And Narada Muni introduced himself and asked him, could you please sing? I'd really just love to hear you sing. Could you please? And Hanuman started singing. Narada sat down and he put his veena on a rock. There was some rock there. So he's sitting by the rock, put his veena on the rock, sort of slightly behind him and on the rock. And Hanuman started singing. And yes, it was just incredible singing. And Narada is just absorbed. It's so wonderful. Some sort of Ram, Kirtan or Bhajan or something. But Narada Muni didn't notice the rock his veena was on was melting. And the veena sunk into the rock. And then suddenly Narada Muni, he notices and he panicked. And he told Hanuman, stop! Stop singing! Right now, stop! Hanuman was shocked. What happened? And Narada said, my veena! My veena! Now, Hanuman stopped singing, so the rock stopped melting and became rock again around the veena of Narada. So Narada is now perplexed. And he says to Hanuman, if you don't mind, could you just sing a little more so I can get my veena out? But Hanuman, apparently, seemingly, was really upset. First of all, you asked me to sing. Then you shouted me to stop. What is this? Now you want me to just sing again? You know, what do you think I am? And he refused and went walking into the palace where he was staying with his mother, Queen of the Monkeys, and with Narada following him. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to shout at you, but please, if you don't mind, because I'm really sorry, into the house. And Hanuman took him from room to room, and then upstairs from room to room to room, with Narada begging him to please forgive me and please sing again. And Hanuman was just, nope. And then his mother came and said, Hanuman, stop this. This is Narada Muni. He's a great saint. You can't treat him like this. You go out again and sing so he can get his veena back. And Hanuman said, I know who he is. I know. Thing is, I wanted to get the dust from his feet in every room in our palace. So therefore, I brought him in and I took him from room to room. But now he's been in every room. We've got the dust. I'll go out and sing again. So he did. Anyway, you know, we shouldn't taunt saintly persons. That's not the right thing. But Hanuman, you know, he's a monkey. Sometimes they do funny things. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Any comment or question? Maharaj, some nectar. Correction. Mataji. Mataji. Prabhu. Okay, you know, sometimes, you know, there's a use of language, and it may vary from place to place, but the way Prabhupada explains that point in the purport is that the false ego associates with different modes of nature, and is, in that way is influenced by the modes of nature. There's an interrelationship, interaction between the false ego and the modes. You know, in other places, it's where there's descriptions of the universal form and the sequences of manifestations. It's put a little differently. But that's what I was also thinking about that myself when I read this last night. Yeah. But it seems to be like that. The false ego is there. And then depending on the nature of the false ego, the modes work on you. That's what is stated here, basically. Is that okay? Enough.
On a similar note, the last comment the Prabhupada made about the intelligence, you kind of blend it with the mind.
Yes, that's another thing. Yeah, you know, I saw that and I thought, gosh, that's unusual. Because, you know, in many places it's described how the mind is distinct from the intelligence. It's not part of, you know, like in modern day psychology generally, as I understand, the mind and intelligence are considered to be more or less like one unit. Yeah. But in our tradition, mind and intelligence are distinguished from each other. You know, really distinguished. That the mind has no intelligence. Because the intelligence has the intelligence. And the mind just goes where the mind thinks it will get the most enjoyment. That's the main standard. You know, where's the best enjoyment? Over there, right, we go there. So, you know, we'd have to ask Srila Prabhupada, I suppose, why did you express it like this? But, you know, reading through the purport, Prabhupada does not talk about the mind in those terms, but talks about the mind and the intelligence in what you might say are sort of the usual terms of them being quite distinct from each other, and how you've got to get your intelligence together get it focused, and particularly with the association of devotees. So, you know, I don't really want to speculate too much or even at all, but, you know, maybe the fact is, you know, the mind deliberates, what about this, what about that, but in its own terms. But then the intelligence comes in and really actually deliberates intelligently, sort of working with the mind or working on the mind, directing the mind, something like that. And so I wouldn't say that we should now start thinking right. Intelligence is a feature of the mind, like that's the normal thing, because it's not. But here they're sort of, you know, they're connected together, they're sort of working together. The mind is perceiving via the senses, and what does the intelligence do? It deliberates on what's been perceived. So there's, you know, there's some sort of connection. A connection is definitely there, although they are distinct. How does that sound to you? What do you say, Mataji? Did you hear that? Yeah, that's right. And that bewilders many devotees. We were just reading it somewhere just a matter of weeks ago. And wow, you know, intelligence is in passion. Mind is in goodness. My mind's not in goodness. But that particularly, I mean, there's a whole explanation of that phenomenon, actually, in terms of the process of creation. Otherwise, the mind would tend to be more in the mode of passion in terms of its functioning, and the intelligence more in goodness, because it's really, you know, trying to see what's right and wrong. Do you have any comment on that, Maharaj? The mind, the intelligence is the feature of the mind's deliberation. Yes.
So I guess another way to read that verse, that last line, would be that intelligence is the form of deliberation.
Yes, well that makes good sense. Right. That's good, yeah. I mean, there's definitely a connection between mind and intelligence. You know, they're side by side, sort of. And, you know, if we take the mind to mean the thinking processes and responses to different sensory stimulations, then the intelligence deliberates on those mental phenomena and, you know, the ideas which are in the mind. So in that sense, you know, you could put it the way it's put here, intelligence is the feature of the mind's deliberation. When the mind deliberates more properly, it's on the basis of the influence of the intelligence. So the intelligence gives the mind's capacity to deliberate sort of helps it. Something along those lines. Yes, Prabhu. From the previous lives? What?
From our previous life,
yeah.
We've got unfulfilled desires.
Yes.
Still with us.
Yes.
And is it related? Is that the root, really, of the modes of material
nature? Wow. I wouldn't say it's the root of the modes, but in many ways it'll be the root of the types of modes we become involved with, according to the description here. You acquire modes in terms of your false ego, and the mind is connected with the false ego. Hare Krishna. Yes, Madhuji. Okay. Well, you know, you can have desires, but it's best to have the right desires. If you've got the wrong desires, you should definitely not be attached to them. And you should try and correct them to become the right desires. You know, just as an example, if you like nice clothes, then I mean, generally, so many people like nice clothes for themselves. But as devotees, we would like to see that the deities have nice clothes, so we change the desire like that. But if you've... Krishna does say in Bhagavad Gita that the thoughts and desires, they pass through the mind, sort of like a river. And the idea is, let them go. Don't hold on. When there's a bad desire and you hold on, become attached, then you've really got a problem.
When you speak of intelligence, you're talking about intellect. So, you know, the senses tell you you want something here and now, like I want this ice cream, and the mind goes, go for it, go for it. But does the intellect sit, the, sort of, is more in tune with subconsciousness?
Yeah, it happens. Yeah, I mean, basically, that's correct. Basically, intelligence, part of the function of intelligence is memory. Memory is a function of intelligence. So you were saying subconscious, whatever one might call it, but the intelligence accesses, you know, what happened when I did that before. And so, you know, it didn't work, so I'm not going to do it again. Yeah, and if the intelligence is strong enough through Krishna consciousness particularly, then the intelligence can tell the mind, no, you're not going to do it, and actually stop you doing it. But if the intelligence is not strong enough, then the mind will say, well, you know, maybe this time, it didn't work that time, but maybe this time. You know, they say, they, them, the ones who say things, say, some of them, that Albert Einstein said that insanity means to continue doing the same things while thinking that you'll get a different result. Yeah, it basically means the mind. I mean, in a sense, insanity means the intelligence becomes so weak that the mind which is prone to just go here and there and anywhere, wherever it's stimulated, the intelligence becomes so weak, just can't control the mind at all. And therefore, you know, people who are insane, they, at least in certain cases, they, you know, they're extremely erratic and do really stupid things. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.